Welcome to episode 9 of Animation Station. I'm Tracy.
And I'm Robbie.
And we had a really fun day today.
Yes, we did.
And I personally am really excited for this one. Yeah. So I think this will be a fun one to kind of analyze. Okay. I don't want to say it's stranger than what we've done, because we've kind of had a very low bar
here,
for strange, frankly, in that we watch a lot of strange stuff. But
yeah. This
one is strange in that it is very French.
So. Yes, oh yeah.
Yeah.
So this week we watched The Triplets of Belleville.
Yes.
Which is a French animated film in 2003.
Yes.
Which, if you watch the film, is pretty... It makes sense.
Yeah. it felt like it was of its... It was of its time. If you were alive during that time period, it makes a lot of sense why it was very much of 2003.
Yeah.
That kind of era.
And why it's very French. So...
Yes.
The movie, one of the things you'll notice as you watch it is a lot of the characters, especially once you get into Belleville, are more, like, ridiculously obese.
Like, it's more of their... Every character has... there's a very kind of archetype or caricature that they're trying to play off. The French characters, I would say that they're more of extremes of certain, like, personal features,
mostly,
like facial features.
They're like noses and teeth. Like,
Noses, teeth, and ears also, to a lesser extent.
So when we get to Belleville, which is supposed to be sort of this
amalgam. This is kind of leaping ahead, though. We should probably tell them what the basic story is.
So.
Yeah. Tell you what. We're going to go, we're going to approach this first from a general synopsis, and then once we get to Belleville, we'll conquer Belleville.
Pump the brakes a little bit. We're getting out of ourselves.
Sorry, it was more of like, it's how there are certain like stylistic and artistic choices that people make where it's like, I kind of stuck with this.
Yeah.
So it was meant to.
Yeah, but, like some of them are very obvious what they're sort of going for.
Yeah. But anyway, let's get through the story first.
Yeah, so let's jump into that.
The story's supposed to take place in, what would you say, like maybe like the late 50s?
Or... I think, late 50s.
Like, I would say the late 50s probably.
Yeah, because...
Or no, sorry, it starts in the mid 50s. So basically... The reason I say mid to late 50s is because of, there's a TV reference a little bit later. But
I'm sorry,
this is leaping way ahead. You guys are going to be really confused. Let's backtrack. All right, so the basic story is there's Madame Sousa. She is the grandmother of this little boy named Champion, who his parents have either died or disappeared under mysterious circumstances or whatever. It's assumed that they're dead.
Yeah, they're
probably dead. Sorry, but no.
Sorry about all the dead parents.
Sorry. The one thing we couldn't be Disney at. There's this little boy. He lives with his grandmother in the French countryside. It looks like it's on the outskirts of Paris or somewhere.
Like some
burg, whatever. And he's very sad. He's a lonely little boy. He's a little bit on the chubbier side, but he's very cute. He kind of looks like an owl. And I like that.
He does.
He looks like a penguin. He looks like a penguin, guys.
Well, they're all kind of like, there's definitely, I would say, you can trace animalistic traits to most of the characters.
Yeah, most of them. It seems to be kind of a trait of, what's his name, Sylvain Chomet? Sylvain Chomet, I think. But we've noticed that this particular director and illustrator, he has a tendency to put kind of animal qualities to some of the characters. It's to draw out some of their features more.
I think it reveals something of the nature of the character as well.
That's true, because Champion starts off being very shy and very quiet. He's still quite quiet by the time he becomes an adult, but
he's much different. His focus as a character is much different.
That's true. So Champion is growing up with his grandmother. He's a pretty lonely little boy. She tries showing him some old film footage of the title trio, the Triplets of Belleville, who are a sister trio of singers. They're all three of them. They appear to perform on would say, like, vaudeville or some kind of, like, circuit back in the 20s, 30s. We see hints of other actors and performers of the time, like my personal favorite, Josephine Baker, who I love. Yeah, yeah. She's the girl in the banana skirt that you see. I love her to death. Marcel Duchamp, I think?
I think so.
No, Maurice Chevalier. I'm sorry. Marcel Duchamp is a painter. Django Reinhardt is the guitar player. Fred Astaire
is in there as a tap dancer. Music was also inspired by Django.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, most of the soundtrack was inspired by Django Reinhardt's guitaring, which it totally shows.
Yeah.
But, so she shows him this old footage of the triplets performing their signature song, Belleville Rendezvous.
Yes.
Which is great. It's very jaunty and fun and energetic. Yeah, I love
it. It very much captures, like, the spirit of what they were going for in terms of, like, the time frame, but also, like, it's just a fun song.
It feels like a fun, like, 20s, like, ukulele almost led song. So, yeah, like, Robbie is dancing. You can't tell. he's doing the shuffle on up to Buffalo, like the, you know, those, like, little jazz hand thingies that you do where you kind of, you turn them inside out, like, wax on, wax off. Wax on, wax off. Yeah, like that. This is entirely visual. They can't see you.
Sorry.
They can't see you, Robbie.
I like pantomime.
I do too, but it only works in so many mediums. Most of them visual. Most of them visual, Robbie. Most of them visual.
You can't pantomime on a podcast, Robbie.
Get it together. No. Anyway, so basically... Wow, that was like 2 minutes of us extrapolating over a scene that takes up 30 seconds. No,
I'm sorry,
no, I'm kidding. That was personally my fault. So she shows him the video. It seems to kind of hold his interest, and she decides to try to teach him how to play piano, which does not seem to work. Like, this is all just a series of vignettes with her trying to figure out how to both connect and help make her cheer her son up,
right,
or
exactly.
her grandson up. So one of them is piano. It doesn't really take to it. And she ends up getting him a dog, who's a really cute little puppy named Bruno, who's like he's very cute and very sweet. But it cheers him up for a little bit. But eventually, he's just like, oh,
yeah,
he's
he kind of loses interest.
Because it's not as engaging for him.
Yeah,
yeah. And she ends up going up into his room and realizing that he's apparently very into bicycling and bicycling racers.
Yeah.
And she decides, like, you know what? That's a perfect idea. And she gets him a tricycle, and he just, like a fish to water, he just immediately jumps in and he just loves it, devotes all of his time to it. And there's a short instance of showing the progression of time with both how the urban sprawl of Paris is starting to seep into where Madame Susan's cottage was.
Well, so, because when Bruno is a pup, he has a little toy train and it ends running over Bruno's tail.
And
so, like, since then, Bruno hates trains. So, like, there's this giant train line that is built...
Like, directly next to their house.
Almost,
like,
yeah. I mean, like, well, it pushes against the house
because she wouldn't move the house, presumably. So they're just like, forget it. We'll just put the train there anyway.
So, like, every, like, 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, he's got it timed on the dot. Like, Bruno will go up and yell at the train.
Yeah,
like,
just barks at the train as it goes by. It's really funny.
He even sees a guy that kind of looks like him.
Yeah,
and he's like,
great.
What?
Well, yeah, then there's that weird, like, dream sequence in which he's on the train
and everyone else.
All the people barking at him.
Yeah.
It was a weird scene. It was
cool. Doesn't feel good, does it, Bruno?
No.
It's like, not all trains are bad, okay?
Some That's trains racist. Are good, Brian.
That's racist, Bruno.
That's trainsist.
That's trainsist. Why do you hate the band Train? Oh, that's right, because you should. Sorry, guys.
Sorry.
Anyway, but no.
Sorry to fans of Trainless.
So if you're really into Pat Monahan, I'm sorry. I actually really hate that thing, like the sorry not sorry hashtag on Twitter. It's so like, grow up. Yeah. So anyway, 10 years later.
So yeah. So
Champion gets really into trains.
No, he
gets really into bikes. Yeah.
So we see.
I feel like I'm being too loud. I'm gonna try to be a little bit quieter. Sorry, guys. The mic's closer to me than it usually is. So.
Yeah, we're
just trying to make sure that our audio is as balanced as possible, so we don't have to, like. Number one, we don't want to kill your eardrums, and number two, we just want to make sure audio is good.
Make sure it's
so.
Audible.
Basically.
.com.
Not sponsoring this podcast.
No, sadly.
You can still go to audible.com and download stuff, but we can't give you a discount. Sorry.
I got nothing for you.
But
gotcha.
Anyway, so at the same time when Bruno is going up and down, like, doing his train routine, Champion and Madame Souza are out training, where she's basically just blowing a whistle behind him, like, yeah, on his old tricycle, which I thought was hilarious. Where he's like huge. He's like this horse of a man.
Yeah, he's this really tall, like, I mean, next to Madame Souza, he's tall.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, but, and also he's got huge legs and calves. Yeah, and everything. He's all legs. There's massive. No weight in his upper body, but he's got a huge nose.
Yeah, he's got this massive nose. But I think that's like we were saying, he's a horse.
Yeah, like he's built like what a racing horse would be, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Which he
gets echoed later.
Yeah, so. Which will, like, becomes a big thing sort of later.
Yeah.
So as an adult, he's more like a horse, and we see when they get home. We see her go through this intense, like, weird ritual of, like, I don't know if it's, like, a massage
it's kind of both.
Maybe it's to help his muscles not be, like, crazy sore.
Well, I think it's both to help, like, typically if you get a massage after, like, a big workout or something, it's supposed to, like, release lactic acid that gets built up in your body from excessive stress. Oh, so that doesn't,
like, cramp up.
So, I mean, it's more of, like, it's because as soon as you get that acid kind of worked out, then it helps to kind of subside the pain that you have. Like, say, if you got, like, a really bad neck ache, as soon as you get, like, a massage, it releases all that tension that's up in there. And part of that is, like, acid buildup. Okay. So, I don't know. I might be reading too much into this, because keep in mind, she does use a egg beater.
Well, she uses... There was an egg beater, a vacuum,
a lawnmower.
Yeah, she, like...
And, like...
It was a weird ritual.
She improvises tremendously, which is great. Like... But
when I first, because I've tried, I think Tracy and I discussed, one of the reasons we watched this is because I've tried to watch this movie like 3 times.
Yeah, he has. It wasn't because you got bored, right? It was more doing other stuff.
Yeah, like the first time I think I was distracted. The second time I was very tired.
Yeah.
And I made the foolish mistake of laying down on the couch, which, spoiler alert, never a good idea. Mm-hmm. I fall asleep every time.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
When I was watching it, not knowing, you know, what was coming through the rest of the film, I just thought it was interesting. We have this scene of the old grandmother taking care of
Champion,
her child, like
her adoptive grandson,
her grandchild, in like this really intense way, and I was like, this is really weird,
but
for like an elder, like it. It makes sense. It makes sense in the context of the film. But
and I also appreciate, like, the fact that she went through such motions to be able to know how to connect with her grandson.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, if this is what you really want to do, then I'll help you do it whatever strange way that I possibly can.
To her credit.
Yeah, that's for sure. But it was, so they go through this routine, and even the amount of food that he's allotted to eat is based off of his weight. So he's put onto a scale while he's having dinner, which is some kind of, like, weird mush that involves... fish bones,
straight up slop.
Yeah, it looks pretty unappealing, but yeah, I probably wouldn't.
I mean, none of the food in that movie looked appealing.
But no, yeah, so I've never seen that elaborate of a post-workout routine ever.
Yeah.
And I had a brother that played football and lacrosse.
So, yeah, wow.
But we never felt the need to put a lawnmower on his back, so, yet, no. But no, so they go through this elaborate routine, and then, like, she's very loving towards him. She takes care of him.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
They seem to have a pretty solid relationship. And this is all in preparation to the Tour de France.
Right. So this is how this is actually one of the ways in which it establishes the time is, during the Tour de France, you see, like, the leader who is, wearing this blue shirt and is actually a reference to...
Like, it appears to be, what was the name of that writer? Because, well, when I was watching it, I assumed it was supposed to be Lance Armstrong.
No, it's actually...
Given the time frame. Because it kind of looked like him.
Yeah,
the guy that was competing, but I don't... But they've always had those yellow jerseys. It's like it's kind of like the equivalent of them giving them the green jackets during the Masters for golf. Or the, like, the championship rings that you would get during a football game. Like, during the Super Bowl.
Right,
like, when you get a Super Bowl.
It was Jacques... Anquetil, I'm probably saying that wrong.
Yeah.
Who won the Tour de France 5 times, but...
Oh, wow.
Based on the fact that that character is directly, like, the leader is a reference to him, and the fact that it ends in Marseille, it places the year at 1957.
Okay.
Because that was his first win, but it was the only year where the Tour de France ended in Marseille.
I see. That makes a lot of sense.
At least
good attention to detail, guys.
Yeah, so...
they're training for it, and they're going up through these cliffs or mountains or whatever in the French countryside. Yeah, so basically, Madame Sousa is...
She's helping him train. The actual Tour de France.
Yeah, wherein she is riding in a van that, whenever
she's
the Tour de France is going
on. She's riding on top of a medical van.
Yeah, on top of a medical van, because, like, if there's bound to be heat exhaustion or competitors just getting tired, where they need to just be able to rest and relax a little bit while the tour is still going on. Or if they, like, straight up pass out because they're just so tired, they need a refuge. So they have these medical vans that would go along behind them. That's when the plot thickens, actually.
Yeah, so this is when the plot actually kicks in. Is
there's some very unsavory characters that happen to also be at the tour.
Yeah, yeah. So the medical van blows a tire, and then a fake medical van comes out and starts following the racers. And it turns out that they're actually kidnapping racers, and so they sabotage the other ones so they can take the place and steal the racers.
Yeah. Well, no, they just straight up steal them. Like they're part of a mafia plot. Yeah,
right. But so they appear as the medical van in order to steal them.
Yeah, like it's all under a guise. But they're, if you see the people that are actually driving the van, you would probably not think to go with them.
Yeah, no.
These gigantic, like, rectangular men.
Yeah, those
that all
cool.
have the same, like, mustache and hair and glasses. Like, they look like they'd be, like, CIA agents if they were all identical twins. Like,
yeah, yeah, it's more... It's
like imagine if you know those motorcycle riding twins from Guinness World Records?
Oh, yeah.
If it was them, but, like, super duper tall.
Yeah,
in the mafia.
Just, like,
it's like that
angular.
Like,
well, I like it because when they stand next to each other, they meld into one person.
Yeah.
Almost, like...
Well,
like
the edges of their jackets, like, disappear. They become one.
Yeah, and then once they have, you see later they have, like, their boss, and he just, like, is absorbed as a third part.
Yeah, but his head will, like, pop out.
Yeah, exactly, and he has, like, little legs dangling. It's very strange,
but it's
very cool.
The boss almost looks like a very tired version of Mario. Like, he's been out in the sun too long.
He reminds me of a dog, because he's just, when we see him, especially later... His head's just resting on the table like a tired dog.
Yeah, like a sad old bloodhound or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But he doesn't have the big old floppy face to go with
it. No, he doesn't really. He just...
Yeah, he just kind of lulls his head onto the table.
And yeah.
He's got a cigarette holder in his mouth and everything
the
whole
time. Yeah,
he
does, like, weird gestures with his
face. Yeah, so the reason that they're collecting all these riders is because they're using them as illegal gambling bets.
Yeah, it was a
weird, as we mentioned, how Champion looks a bit like a horse. It's because he ends up getting turned into a human racehorse.
They put them on these
stationary bikes.
Right.
And they have them each tallied. With this, like a carnival game, if you've ever been there,
it's exactly
where
like
you're
that.
Like shooting water into a thing and you have to see where the racers are going. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's exactly like
that. But with people.
But with actual people on bikes.
Yeah.
So Champion gets kidnapped and taken off to Belleville, and Madame Sousa is able to follow the truck out to the pier and then ends up. Like, paddling essentially a rowboat across the ocean.
Yeah, she realizes that Champion and the other riders have been transported onto this enormous ship that physically makes no sense.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen, how small the actual base of the boat is relative to how tall it is?
Yeah, it's
if you stretched out the Titanic, basically.
Yeah.
Like, if the Titanic had the proportions of a Pez dispenser, basically. Like, that's the general feeling that I got
pretty
from
much.
It. She rents a paddle boat for, like, £1 for 25 minutes, and then she just starts paddling.
Yeah, you see the guy on
the ship, and he's just, like, checking his watch, like, I really don't think she's coming back.
Yeah, he looks at it, he's like, 20 minutes.
It's like, damn.
She's not coming back. Well, I've been had again!
Cause she caught a boy! And eventually she's just like, well, I may as well put Bruno to use, and she does the whole donkey with a carrot above its head thing with him. I think she strings, like, a caramel or something above his head.
Yep. It's consistently caramels with him.
Yeah, he just loves candy, I guess. But, so they eventually make it to Belleville, which is this weird combination of, what is it?
It's New York?
It's Montreal, New York, and Quebec City, I think. Quebec.
Quebec?
Quebec, yeah. I've been there once, so I should know that. But no, like, so it's this enormously sprawling city.
Yeah, it's like it's, urban sprawl and, it's like, ridiculous. Skyscrapers and, like, it's crazy, but...
And it's weird because they've got a Statue of Liberty there, but the Statue of Liberty is morbidly obese and is brandishing a turkey drumstick as opposed to a torch.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh...
Rough.
That's where, this is made by the French.
Yes, that's where it's very much made by the French in 2003, in which our relationship was a little rough.
To be fair, we didn't have good relationships with anyone at that point.
England really liked us.
No, England was great with us. Everyone else hated us.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I don't know, like, given the time, I don't really blame them.
No, yeah.
It was a dark time in history for us. Like, that was basically our equivalent of, like, Vietnam, where it's like, guys, we know it sucks, we can't do anything about it. We're sorry.
It was not.
I wasn't at the point where I could vote, so.
Yeah.
Sorry. It was like, that was immediately after our time. Before our time.
Kicked out right, like, before we got to vote.
Believe me, we would have taken care of it, but hopefully.
Didn't but ask.
Anyway.
So.
Didn't I ask.
So, she ends up in Belleville, and sort of quickly realizes that the franc she spent on her boat was literally the last franc she had.
That's it. Like, that's all she had left to her name.
So, she's unable to get food, and eventually, backtracking a bit to their weird massage ritual, she was also doing something strange with the wheel. I don't know if she was, like, testing the alignment or something.
No, I think she was trying to realign the spokes, like, just to, I think she was just trying to, like, fine-tune the bike to the point where, to make sure that it ran as well as it could. Like, because, like, if you're racing a lot or something, there's bound to be some wear and tear. So I think she was trying to realign the wires to make sure it wouldn't, like, jeopardize the integrity of the wheel.
Yeah, so she was doing this weird, like, alignment thing with the tuning fork and the wheel. So, when she's in Belleville, she starts doing it, presumably it's, like, a coping mechanism.
What, like, just, like, actually fixing it?
Yeah, remember, she had the wheel.
Well, I mean, I think it's just kind of all she knew, or, like, that she didn't
know.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah, it's a matter of a coping mechanism. Like, well, I'm in a strange place, I don't know what to do, so I'm going to focus on something I do understand.
And she just happened to find a bicycle wheel in an alley
She was doing that, and it made music, and she was almost... Because she's using a tuning fork to do it.
Yeah.
So it starts making music, and these three old women come out.
Gets swarmed by these three old women that start to improvise and start scatting and singing. And she later, she realizes that they're the triplets. They're the triplets of Belleville, where, like, I would think that she would figure out as soon as they actually start, like, singing the Belleville Rendezvous.
Yeah, right?
Because it's like, you should know who these people are. You like them enough to show them to your grandson.
It was pretty cool. It was a pretty neat little scene of them joining, and then they end up taking her back to their apartment, and she befriends them.
Yeah.
And,
She goes over to their house, and they have, the triplets treat her to dinner, they bring her over to their apartment, which is in this kind of derelict tenement.
Yeah.
They go up to, like, you can see there's, like, prostitutes in the hallway, presumably doing or selling drugs, whatever. They go up to their apartment, and, she realizes that she sees all this memorabilia of them, all the awards that they all have. And an old picture that shows there are three of them. There's one that wears a hat that basically covers up her eyes and has a tall feather attached to it.
Right.
And then two that have two different kinds of, like, furs around their necks. Yeah. I think one is a, I think one's a fox, the other one's a mink, probably. But yeah, like, there's the three of them. They're best distinguished by the colors that they wear, though.
So, aside from that,
obviously they're triplets, so they look alike, so.
Yeah, and they don't have any names, so.
Yeah, but, so they bring Madame Souza over, and they decide to make dinner for her, which is all variants on different kinds of frog being served.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's a very amusing scene, like, the one of them just, like, walks out to this, like, swamp, and then just, like, has a fishing net and a chair and a grenade.
Yeah,
And she just chucks the grenade into the swamp.
And it explodes, this geyser of frogs comes out of the lake. And she's just like, all right, this should be enough.
Yeah, and then she walks back with the
Basically. And frogs. Their creativity for cooking with frogs is pretty astonishing.
Yeah.
Like, they make dessert out of tadpoles. Their main entree is the frogs in either some kind of... Is it like a broth or a stew?
I think it was a stew initially.
And they also had kebabs. Like
later they had kebabs.
Kebabs.
I'm trying to think.
The way that she finds out that Champion's being held.
I don't even remember how that happens.
I think what happened was she was going with them. Eventually, they end up going to dinner at a restaurant. And Bruno is there. I think he might smell Champion on the mob boss or one of the other bosses or something. He just wants to go steal his food, basically.
Yeah,
Bruno has an insatiable appetite. As he's quite a portly old dog.
Yeah, he is.
Despite his very tiny old legs, he's quite large.
Yeah, yeah.
Bruno steals food a lot during the movie.
He tries to. I think he's trying to get food from him, mm-hmm. and ends up happening on some piece of cloth that has Champion smell.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's what it was. And then they use that as a way to track where he's supposed to be.
Yeah, and then they meet, Madame Sousa ends up...
Well, I think she also recognizes the guys, too, right? Did she ever see the shadowy guys that are
remember.
In the... I don't know if she did, but I think she also recognized that there's this mechanic that works for the boss
So she ends up tailing him for a day and figuring out...
That he ends up going back over to that warehouse where Champion happens to be.
His design was clearly a mouse.
Yes, he was a mouse. Who also really likes Disney World.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he does.
Fun little...
Yeah, which, though the director does not appear to like Disney World.
No.
At all.
There's two
nothing
pretty,
about Walt Disney.
Two pretty mean references to Disney in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, well, mean relative to if you like Walt Disney.
Yeah, so, well, I suppose.
I mean, we enjoy some of the movies, but we both know...
As a company, I
understand the criticisms completely.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah. So
she ends up following him, and then they kind of formulate half-bake a plan to spring Champion.
Mm-hmm. I think it was more them just trying to they had to try to figure out how to game that machine itself to make sure they could help them get out, which will literally involve them peddling their way out of there. They managed to peddle their way through a brick wall.
Yeah.
But not before there's this shootout thing that happens between all of... Which is great. Because, how well-armed these triplets are is pretty astonishing. I don't know how they build up such an arsenal, but
they get
I guess...
all those grenades?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. They don't really tell us, but they just have them.
Not.
So, why not?
Yeah, so... they sabotage the machine and...
And then the mob bosses end up trailing them through the city.
In what has to be the slowest car chase ever.
Except for maybe OJ.
Yeah, right.
But that might be a little bit before your time. Guys, OJ Simpson was a... No, I'm not going to do that.
Google it.
No, just Google it. No, actually, you can watch the video itself. It's actually pretty weird.
Yeah,
it's the slowest speed chaser. Because he, no, never mind. Anyway, the fact that... The reason that the... chase itself is so slow is because Champion and there's another one of the bikers that was not killed by the mob boss from exhaustion. He was shot in the head you would shoot a horse if it stopped racing or something. They're basically treated like cattle or horses or animals or whatever.
There's one
beast of burden, basically.
Yeah. And that's pretty directly
reference. For sure. But the fact that it's Champion, the other racer, and one of the triplets. They're all pedaling at the same time.
Apparatus.
But they can't be going faster than 7 miles per hour, probably.
Yeah,
maybe 6 miles per hour.
Topping that chase at 10.
No more than 10. I would say no more than 8, probably. But anyway,
they're on this machine. A massive ton of mob bosses.
And they're being followed in identical long black cars. They're all driving the exact same car.
Yeah, and, it's
followed down the roads, even though, because these other cars are going so fast, you would think that they would be able to catch up with them, but there are these weird happenstances of weird stuff happening to them.
One
randomly hit by a train, or this one... this one gets hit by a train, or this one took a turn too quickly and started rolling, or... Like, weird coincidental things keep happening to the point where my favorite one is near the very end where they're driving up the hill, but the hill is so steep that the car just, like, folds back over.
It's like, wait a minute, the engineering there.
It's like
not there.
It's like, number one, who planned this city to be so undrivable?
Yeah, actually.
Because you see other cars that seem to be able to get up it just fine. And like the racers can do that too, even though they're pedaling with their legs.
Who designed these awful cars?
Either the awful cars or the horrible infrastructure of the city.
Yeah, something
like that's the weird stuff that we occupy our minds with.
We need to hold ourselves. We need to hold that city.
Well, no, because if the racers can go up themselves and they're just doing it with their own manpower, but you mean to tell me that a car that's powered by like at least what like 120 horsepower or something cannot make its way up a hill because physics? I just laughed my butt off when I saw that. I thought it was so great. So then eventually they manage to separate from them. The mob boss gets killed by the car rolls or something explodes, I think. There's a big explosion at the end of it.
There's a big explosion.
That also involves fireworks and the French national anthem.
Yeah, I can't remember what causes that.
I remember what it was. Madame Souza tripped them.
Oh, it's a giant! I forgot about that. Yeah, so one thing we noticed.
Oh yeah, it's
pretty obvious,
that.
But
yeah, but you want to talk about Madame Souza's character?
Yeah, Madame Souza. So she's this tiny little old woman, and you notice pretty immediately she has this weird walk because
her legs are disproportionate.
Yeah, so she has this giant, like, probably foot high heel.
Yeah, like she wears a platform on one of her legs.
Yeah.
Because her other, I think it's her right leg, is so short that she needs to be able to walk at like so that she's not limping.
Normally, yeah.
Yeah.
So she ends up,
amazing.
She sticks the platform out and it like.
She literally just, she like them, sticks it out like she's going to trip them and they trip. And the car, it falls off the river.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
watch
it falls off the bridge. They explode, and then it, like, falls into the river, and then there's fireworks and everything everywhere.
Yeah, super, super goofy, but
that last bit was surprisingly very fast.
Yeah.
Even though, despite how slow they were going. But the juxtaposition, I thought, was hilarious.
Yeah, it was just so weird, because they were in, the, like, actual cars moving at, like, car speed, chasing bikes. At a slow bike speed.
So perfect.
But it was fun. That's pretty much the movie.
Yeah, at the very end, Champion's rewatching, I think he's rewatching something of the triplets doing stuff.
Yeah.
That part I thought was a little bit ambiguous. I was like, is this just him reflecting, or was the entire story him reflecting?
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah. So that's the plot synopsis in a nutshell, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of the whole thing.
So what about, let's get into, what surprised you the most? Okay, because you tried to watch it 3 times.
Yeah, so I've...
I want to know what kept you from seeing it before? Or just laziness?
Yeah,
I've done the same thing.
Same reason I haven't watched many movies that I said, I really am interested in that. I'm just lazy.
Well, it's just lack of time. It happens.
Yeah, time constraints happen, so...
But yeah.
No, I think the thing that surprised me the most was, like, the overall plot that it wasn't going to be about... I mean, it ultimately is about this grandmother and grandson relationship, but...
The most we really get to see of them is at the very beginning, because, like, the rest is just indicative of her devotion to her grandson.
Right.
It's like, she will literally stop at nothing to make sure that he's okay.
Right, like, it was this weird movie about,
she's
like...
She's tenacious.
She is.
Like,
good for
she
her,
does
man.
Not give up.
Like, instead it's this movie about, like, mob bosses, and, like... Like, I thought Champion would be a bigger character, and he is, but at the same time, like, the protagonist is Madame Souza.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, no question. And, like, I kind of knew that the one thing I knew was, like, the triplets of Belleville are not the main characters.
Mm-mm.
They're going to be important
characters. Would you consider them more of, like, a plot device?
I don't know if I would call them a plot device, necessarily.
They're more of, like, I think they more kind of help, well, I mean, they're there to function to help with the rising action, which is rescuing Champion and getting him out of Belleville.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think they're just a delightful group of sidekicks. Almost.
Yes, for sure. What about, I saw this movie roughly around when it came out.
Okay.
I think I saw it around, let's see, it came out in 2003?
Yes, ma'am.
I think I saw it around 2004. I was still pretty young. I think the thing that struck me the most about it, which I think is kind of like the recurring praise that it got, was the style of animation, because I'm really into, like, surrealism and just really, like, strange occult kind of vaguely grotesque looking things.
Like, yeah, there's just, something like
there's something to be said about, like, just like how the design choices that they made for these characters, especially like with Madame Sousa, like they embody kind of like what they are supposed to look like. Or yeah. Like Madame Sousa, she kind of looks like a mole or like a owl or something. Mm-hmm. Champion looks like a horse. Like the other characters are just, as we mentioned before, this is, are we going to include that thing from before about the very beginning about what the Americans look like?
Oh, right. Yeah. So we got sidetracked on this.
There was something we brought up a little bit earlier. But...
So all the characters that you see in Belleville that aren't like the main characters, tend to be like just massively obese, like really
to a really alarming degree,
to an extent that is like,
it's like where you can't like ignore it.
That it's I mean it's indicative of some prejudice against I think Americans. And that's,
I mean, instance. And at the time, like, I get it.
Yeah, at the
I
time, mean,
it, but at the same time, we also watched his short from before, which is called "The Old Woman and the Pigeons," where like, okay, that's consistent.
Yeah,
I think he's just going. I'm starting to get the impression. I think he's just always had like a disdain for Americans. Whatever, I get it. Whatever, it's
fine.
It's fine. Whatever. I mean, we've made equal amounts of jokes about the French, so that's actually probably absolutely pretty fair. So,
that was kind of a thing, and I think it's very apparent that it's like sort of a product of its time.
Because
The Old Woman and the Pigeons was produced not long before.
What, that short?
It was 1998. It was five.
Kind of. So, but it was roughly kind of the same time, whatever.
Yeah.
But no, so it's not just the depictions of Americans. Like, I mean, I get it at the time. I get it.
Yeah.
But it was also what I loved was just the overall design of the mob characters, because they're all completely identical.
Yeah, there was a like, nice, like,
they're well, almost, they had a, there was they like had Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's, but wearing like huge suits.
I mean, yeah, it was literally like a cookie cutter. Like, I think the one difference was like the bodyguards had different hair, mm-hmm. and the mob bosses had slightly different faces, and that was it.
But even when there are these two that are in a that are first in the van when they're transporting or they're stealing Champion, the two of them get into the car at the same time, take out their cigarettes, light them. At the exact same time, where it's so like it's a mirror image of the two of them animated.
Yeah.
The two of them are animated doing all these same actions at the same time, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, I thought I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Visually, it was very pleasing to me.
Yeah, the animation itself is ridiculously detailed.
No, it's very like, good.
I don't know how
except
long.
Except for the bikes.
Yeah. Except for the bikes.
Which I didn't pay attention to, so I mean,
I didn't actually even notice that until you mentioned it.
Yeah,
I was
like,
oh, that is a little bit uncanny,
kind of. Like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I get it. But yeah, no. So, but I love the environments themselves. Are like Belleville looks like such a huge, huge city.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
Mm-hmm. And I like the environment before. There's all that urban sprawl where Madame Sousa's living. It's like, well, that seems really nice. And then eventually, it's just like systematically, you see it creeping farther and farther to the point where like the train tracks basically form the city just like outside of the city where she lives.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like that's like the city limit. And oh man. Do we want to talk about any of the controversy that was involved with it too? Do you remember the?
There was like a big.
Yeah.
You'll have to go into that because I don't remember that as well.
Let me look into it.
Looking into it a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was some controversy about like his background artist, right?
Yeah. No, it was it was the artist that literally did his backgrounds was working with.
Yeah, yeah. And if you look at, we looked at some of them earlier this week. It is.
I mean, yeah, so, all right, so, apparently the director, Sylvain Chomet, he wanted the triplets to imitate the stance and walk of basketball stars. That's hilarious.
Yeah, which I definitely see because they're super tall and thin.
Oh, now this makes sense. All right, so apparently all the cars that were used for the mob bosses are Citroën cars. But it's there's a joke that apparently the cars have such poor turning that they flip over. Like, that's why all that stuff kept happening with the cars. That's like the amazing. Reliable
Robin.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Okay, so I guess there is something to it, but it's still...
I'm just going to add this as a little kind of snippet, because it was something that we ended up going, or, like, encountering when we were,
looking some stuff.
Yeah, like, looking some, like, researching what this movie is about. There was a little bit of controversy involved with one of Sylvain Chomet's former collaborators, Nicolas de Crécy.
Right.
Apparently, he was the background artist for The Old Lady and the Pigeons, which was the short that he had made in, that the two of them had made together.
Yeah, back in 1998.
Uh-huh. And, what happened was, apparently, there was a comic that, Nicolas had released, I think, back in, like, the 90s. Okay. Like, at least, it's not, like, the late 90s, then maybe, like, the early 2000s, whatever it was, that featured, when they did a shot-for-shot comparison of exactly which which stills in the comic in question were basically plagiarized for The Triplets of Belleville.
No, pretty...
It's uncanny, and it's pretty egregious.
Yeah, which, no, it's...
Yeah, it's... I mean, that was one thing that I noticed. I wasn't sure if we should bring it up, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, it happened, and I can completely understand why Nicolas might be a little bit wary about wanting to get involved with that.
Again. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I mean, that makes complete sense.
So
hopefully that doesn't feel like too much of a veer right off of the trail, but... Yeah, it was just something that I noticed.
Yeah.
And,
I remember we were looking at those a little bit.
And I was like, ooh.
Wow.
Yeah, well, wow. I'd been looking through them on my iPad when we were watching the film, and I was like, ooh, that's kind of rough.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, come on, man, really? But,
yeah
so, I mean, like, it happens, it does, and it's a shame to see, like, because they appeared to have a great partnership, but,
Yeah.
Deadens the brakes.
Yeah,
like that. Do. That's why people go through partnerships every now and then, and sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So. But let's do some closing thoughts then.
Yeah, so, I mean, like...
Your overall impression of
the film. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I mean, like I said, we were talking about it earlier, and I was like, Tracy, you're going to have to do the synopsis, because what happened? Like, I know, I understand it, I remember it, but also... How
what happened?
What happened? How was it 80 minutes? How did that take an hour?
It felt like... I mean, I think that the pacing itself was actually really good.
That's what I'm saying, though.
Where it filled its time so well. I think one of the best strengths of this film is that the characters and their motivations and the overall general feel of the film is so well thought out that... It just being 80 minutes breezes by, and you don't even notice where it's like, I don't know if it necessarily feels like it's longer, but it's like you appreciate more because it takes its time with exploring a lot of things. It's mostly with the relationships of the characters themselves, where like, in my opinion, I think the biggest chunk is just establishing where, like, who Madame Souza is, like, what her relationship with Champion is. Like, there's still the entire arc of her getting over to Belleville, but in terms of time, it's more spent on, like, how all these characters interact, where, like, there's clearly a power structure between the mob bosses, and yet the triplets are still able to kind of circumvent that because they have been in, like, they've both, like, been in a business for a bit longer, and they kind of, they know sort of the ins and outs of, like, how these things work. They're not necessarily fully equipped to handle these mob bosses, aside from their immense artillery.
Yeah, surprising number of grenades.
But, when they have the chase sequences, they seem a lot faster. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, it just didn't... I think it's just because when you're doing a traveling thing after a certain point, it's like, okay, this is going to get boring eventually, so we want to try to keep it as succinct as possible.
Right. Yeah, and I think they did a good job keeping a lot of things, like, tight.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Because, like, I think about, like, reflecting on it a bit, like it's a lot of the scenes that I think took up more time than I realized are establishing what's going on with Champion.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously those scenes exist, but I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
No, I know. I was trying to wonder if what I was saying sounded rambly. I really hope it didn't.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry, guys.
We're a little tired.
Yeah.
It was a long
day. We had a very long, very fun day. So. But at the same time, it's I think for me, the biggest strengths of the film is the very clearly established relationships of the characters. And this is all done with primarily no dialogue.
Yeah, yeah. There's
That's another thing we should probably mention, is that the movie's almost entirely free of dialogue, except for, like, there's a couple of instances with, like...
Well, there's, I think Charles de Gaulle's politician on TV.
He's just doing a speech. Yeah, there's, like, some... There's some tourists, I guess, like, some of the American tourists kind of talk, really, but they don't really interact with anyone. Like, I mean, the they talk at them, they don't have an exchange with them.
Yeah, the only line of dialogue that I...
He's like, hamburgers.
Hamburgers?
No money, no hamburgers. Oh, like that. And she immediately takes him back.
Yeah.
Fun. But the rest is mostly just, it's like singing. That's about all we get. Because everything else is completely dialogue free.
Yeah, it's another one like Boy in the World where it's,
yeah, where it's
silent,
like,
and it's musically based. So.
I really like those films, though. Because
they're really,
like,
good.
Because there's just so much that you can do through pantomime and silent storytelling where it's like, it shows the real strength of your story if you don't have to have as many words.
There, right, yeah.
Where,
well,
everyone knows exactly what's going on, to an extent. At least.
I mean, yeah, that's like, the thing. Being able to visually tell the story as opposed to having to, like, do a dialogue dump.
Well, that's kind of one of the pillars of when you're getting into filmmaking is show, don't tell. Which
right.
This movie does almost entirely.
Yeah, right. Well, like, yeah. Yeah, I constantly think of that with,
Okay. Yeah, because there are tons of movies where, like, they feel the need to explain a lot of stuff to
you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it feels like it's like the director talking down to you, where it's like, all right, we don't think you can understand this, or they think that it's too confusing, and then, like...
Yeah, well...
Like, that's one of my criticisms I have towards Inception, where they get so engrossed in talking to you about how complicated the thing is. If you pay attention, you can figure it out. And I don't like... I don't like people extrapolating on stuff like that, personally.
Sorry? But yeah, no, and I agree.
It's still a good movie, but
yeah.
Paprika was better.
Yeah, obviously. well, no, because I think of the Every Frame of Painting episode where he talks about...
Yeah.
He's done a couple of things where he's talked about, like, storytelling, obviously, but, like, one of the things he talks about is, like, a very common trope is, like, just sort of this dialogue dump, and it's usually done over very particular scenes, like travel scenes that establish...
Mm-hmm. The one that he did on Edgar Wright with how to direct for comedy.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah,
I think that's
that was great.
I think that's probably one of my favorites because he talks about. Sorry, we're a little off topic, but I think that it does.
I think that this is still somewhat relevant.
Yeah, I think this is relevant to the idea of, like, showing and not telling.
Mm-hmm.
So Edgar Wright's movies are not only funny in, like, situation and dialogue. Mm-hmm. But also the way in which he edits the movies are very funny. Like,
they're expertly timed.
Yeah, like my favorite example being the beer.
Yeah,
scene, like, how are you going to establish that among a group of drinkers, one of them has stopped drinking?
Yeah, this is during At the World's End. There's like there are these characters, and then one of them does not drink.
Yeah, so you see him, boom! Like it's this nice shot of, like, beer, beer, beer. Water. And it's so, like, if you haven't seen the movie, go see the movie because it's really good, but, like, the way that scene is done and the way that he repeats it as a motif, mm-hmm. it's very satisfying. And as opposed to, like, the example Tony used was Old School, where the character just says, well, I don't drink anymore.
Yeah.
Which, like, yes, it gets across the point, but you could also do something with it that's amusing.
Well, and they could have done the same thing with, like, just showing him, like, drinking, like, a Shirley Temple or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, like, something that's clearly not alcoholic.
Yeah.
Or, like,
there's any number of ways you can do it that don't require wasting time on dialogue.
Yeah, which is why I liked... There was one scene in the movie that was a little bit earlier where when Champion is... when Madame Souza is trying to figure out where Champion is in the city... do you remember with, like, the accordion player where there was ambulances? She was crushed underneath a bridge
because
they didn't realize that there was such low clearance. And there's this woman celebrity that plays an accordion that's apparently on the same Tour de France trip as them, who Champion really likes. And they find out that apparently she got crushed under a bridge when she was performing.
Yeah, she was standing on top of a bus and clearly,
and no one told her that it was going to be, like, or she didn't think to duck down at that point when she saw it coming. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think when we see her, she's clearly very tired.
Yeah, probably.
There's, like, flies buzzing around her and stuff.
They were getting stuck to her teeth. Yeah.
Well, I don't remember her name. There's an actual real-world analog to that character.
Well, it was, like, Rivette or something?
Yeah,
like,
Rivette or something.
Like Roxanne Rivette or something. I don't know. I forget what it is.
But anywho, she's like, that's pretty much what it's like being in that position. You have tons of bugs in your teeth, and you sit there playing an accordion for several hours.
And just have to keep grinning no matter how gross and disgusting it is.
Yeah. But yeah, I do like that, because just show that to you, and you're like, oh god.
Well, it's the same thing with Bruno, where, like, once you realize that, like, he hates trains, then he starts associating all the, this is just a toy train that ran over his tail when he was a puppy. And since then, he's immediately just considered all trains to be evil, and he has to bark at them because he hates them.
Uh-huh.
So, but, yeah, I think I like it because it's got such a kooky, strange kind of design for all their characters. Like, just the animation itself is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking,
We mentioned this in the car earlier. You can tell,
character design.
Yeah.
And, like, if you're designing characters, a good way to think about it is to select them.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you can visually identify each character based on a silhouette, then that's probably better because you created more varied character designs.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie clearly does that. And I love it for that.
Except for the Americans.
Yeah, all the Americans are generally the same shape.
We're not bitter. We get it. It was a little bit... Did it surprise you the first time you saw those?
Those characters? A little bit. I was like, wow, that's very gratuitous.
Yeah.
But
whatever.
What are you going to do?
It's like, I mean, like, we, like, what, like, one of their, no, sorry, one of the most popular depictions that we have in our opinion of the French, at least through the Simpsons' eyes, is calling them cheese-eating surrender monkeys. And that was done by a Scotsman that was on the Simpsons. So it's like, I feel like I get some of their reasons to hate us for that. Well, France itself has such a strong animation industry. Because there's, like, they've got, like, the friggin' dynamos. If you've seen any of the student films that come through Gobelins, it's amazing. I hate them because they're so talented. Like, it'll be like, you ever have, like, that one friend where it's like, this person is so much better at me than this thing. They're really nice, but I also hate them for being so talented. Kind of like that. Yeah, like that. It's that. So, thanks a lot, France. Making us feel insecure about our animation industry. We just gotta start shipping everybody out. It's like the next logical step is Canada, guys. Sorry.
Oh, dear.
So, that's okay. Oh, man. That's where the money is. But yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah, I think that's us on,
probably.
Triple to Belleville.
Yeah. It's a very strange movie.
It's a bit of a trip. Like,
if you like jaunty music, the soundtrack's superb.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I've noticed a very consistent thing with all the movies that we've been reviewing lately. All seem to have really good soundtracks. Like, the vast majority of them do.
Yeah, so, overwhelmingly.
Which is nice, because, like, if you're treating an animated film essentially like a feature-length music video, why not give it some kick-ass music?
Yeah, I mean, I think we said this with The Boy in the World, but if you're gonna do a
non-speaking, you have to make sure you have good music.
You have to have music that's really good.
Yeah, which is probably another one that we're going to be getting into shortly. As we've been batting around an idea for another film that happens to have an amazing soundtrack, but is also non-verbal. So,
yes.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be the next one.
Probably.
I think that'll be fun. So.
So, but we're not going to tell you.
No.
That's not our
style. That's for later, guys. You know, we like to have surprises here.
So.
Yeah. But, yeah,
I guess that's about all I've got.
So, thanks, guys. Sorry if this one seemed a little bit.
We're a little
out of sorts right now, but I hope that was succinct enough. And yeah, I don't know. Overall, I would just say check out the movie.
Yeah.
I think you'll enjoy it regardless.
Yeah, like, thanks for listening as always.
Yes, thank you very much. You can, if you have any questions or comments or any recommendations for films, you can contact us on Twitter. My handle is @TCTroush. That's on Twitter and Facebook. That's on Twitter and Instagram. The best way to find me is just by looking at the show notes if you need to, because my name is a pain in the ass to spell. So I wouldn't do that to you. Just look at the notes and you can find me on there.
Yep. And I'm lobster_writer on Twitter and lobster99 on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But, yeah, if you have any questions, whatever, just let us know. We're always up for new ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Hope you have a great, we're recording this on Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, so I Memorial hope you Day? Have a yeah. great whatever.
So have a great, hopefully you don't have to work on Monday. So,
doesn't
yeah.
doesn't matter.
Yeah, it don't matter.
Hope by the time you didn't work Monday yeah. by the time you listen to this.
Hope but, whatever you did, it was fun.
Yeah.
Let's just wish you a good Monday. Weekend. And if you're listening to us from not America, good morning.
Yeah, hey, what's
like,
up?
I don't know. What's up? Hey, contact us. We want to hear from you. All right. But thank you guys.
Yeah,
and thank you very much. Have a great listen and yeah. All right. Okay. Thanks again, guys. Bye.
Ooh. Swinging bell rendezvous, marathon dancing, dookie doo, voodoo can can bada boo, a well swinging round.